I don't know, a little bit nostalgically, why does the spiritual path take so long? Why does it seem so hard? Why you put out all the effort you can, you do everything you can, and still it seems to take a long time. And we were at breakfast, and it was a very, very poignant moment, because he kind of midway between eating, he was eating an egg, midway between that, he just set his fork down, and he said this very succinct summation of the spiritual path. He said, the whole of the spiritual path is about getting rid of the ego. And in order to do that, it takes greater attunement and seeing God as the doer in all things and deeper and longer meditation. Then he picked up his fork and started eating again. Well, I've been working on that little conundrum now for 3 years and have shared it a few times. But the whole of the spiritual path is about getting rid of the ego. So if that's the whole of it, let's start there. What is the ego? When God creates the universe, he has to do it by putting an energy out that has duality to it. Because without duality, there cannot be any outward creation. Unity is singular, and that singularity is in God's consciousness. So there has to be duality. That's represented by many, many different things. Primarily, it's represented by vibration. And all the different scriptures talk about that in the Christian Bible. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. That refers to the vibration. A word is the way we take our consciousness and project it outwardly by vibrating the vocal cords, which vibrates the air, and it makes it understandable to other people so we can communicate it. In the same way, God vibrated his consciousness, but at a very, very fundamental level, which is referred to symbolically as the sound of Om, or as the Om vibration, which brings everything, that's the Word of God, which brings everything into creation. And we can actually tune into that vibration. And if we do that, and I'm going to talk about that as one of the techniques later on, if we do that, it is immediately reminding of God and of our deeper nature. Okay, so as part of this projection outward, then God differentiates as he comes outward and he creates the heavens and the earth, light and dark, up and down, all the different variations on duality. As a part of that, he also, as if fractures himself into many, many different souls. So our real nature is as an individual aspect of God that is eternal, that has all of his qualities. It's eternal, it's innately blissful, it is conscious, and that soul incarnates over and over and over again. So it's as if God dreams the world, or as Lahiri Mahashaya puts it, he meditates the world. So we kind of think dream is kind of, you don't have any control over it, but I like that phrase that God meditates the world outwardly. And so he creates that outward kind of differentiation. Now, Master said that a lot of Master's teachings to help us understand this relates back to the nature of dreaming. He said that there is actually a spiritual reason that we dream, and that's so that we can understand how God creates the universe. So when we dream at night, we have a lot of different scenes, a lot of characters in the dream. We have time, we have space, we have all the elements of this world. But the reason that we know that we're dreaming is because we wake up in the morning. How would we know whether we're dreaming or not if we didn't wake up? We wouldn't. And yet in that dream, like God, we take on the character of one person in that dream. You have the viewpoint of one. You don't have the viewpoint of all the different characters in the dream. You have the viewpoint of one character. That is the explanation of the ego. See, our consciousness, self-evidently so, creates the whole of the dream. And yet, we have the tendency to take on the viewpoint of one of those characters in the dream. And taking on that one and not relating to the others, that's like the ego. And so the soul, remember, the soul is the perfect reflection of God, but in kind of individualized form. When it comes into this world, into the world of duality, it takes on, at least temporarily, the viewpoint of one character. And having that viewpoint of one character, depending on how stuck we are in the reality of one character as opposed to the totality of the dream, we have greater or lesser ego. And so we get stuck in the sense of, I am this body, this personality, with this senses, and this set of experiences. But are we really? Are we really? Master told the story about a soldier who had a dream, and in that dream, he went out on the battlefield and was shot and died. And he went through in the dream all of the experience of that. The next day, he went out on the battlefield and was shot and died and went through all the experience of that. From the first dream, he woke up as the soldier. From the second dream, he woke up as himself on the astral plane. So Master said, which dream was real? Which dream was real? And so we think that this dream that we're in is the reality. But when we die, we'll wake up on the astral plane and we'll be able to look back and see, oh, wasn't that an interesting dream? All the difficulties that I had, all the pain that I felt, all the joys that I felt, it was really a complex dream. And we do that over and over and over again. Master said that some people are still dreaming, going out from the astral plane to the physical plane and back and forth, back and forth. It's like sleeping at night, dreaming, waking up. However old you are, you've done that for every day, for however many years you've lived. However old you are, you've done that for every incarnation, for however long you've been in existence, which is a very, very long time. And so that dream nature and coming back from that dream nature is part of the drama. The other part of the drama is that we know on the soul level what our true nature is. And so therefore, no matter what experiences we go through, we're always trying to get back to awakening to our own true soul nature. That's why nothing in this world will ever be ultimately satisfying to us, because it's like the person in the dream having a little bit of an awareness just in the subconscious mind that the dream world isn't quite real. And therefore, whether we acquire wealth in a dream or don't acquire wealth in a dream doesn't ultimately fulfill us because it isn't real. But in this world, many, many people have as their main goal the acquisition of wealth or the acquisition of something of the duality, the world of duality, the dream world of this life. They want to acquire something in that. So they have a goal. And that goal can be very, very compelling. I mean, we can spend incarnations with the desire to become rich. And in fact, we have spent incarnations with the desire to become rich. If you don't have that desire in this life, you know why you don't? Because you acquired it before and saw that it was worthless. As Swami likes to point out, Howard Hughes, the richest man in the world, at the time of his death, a week before his death, a reporter asked him, "Are you happy?" "Nah, I can't say I'm happy." So wealth doesn't do it. But if you've never acquired wealth, you can't have somebody come along and say to you, "Wealth doesn't do it." Well, you can. I mean, spiritual teachers do that all the time. They come along and say, "Wealth isn't the way, the key to happiness." But unless you have experienced that for yourself, you won't really believe them, because you look around and all those who are still hoping to acquire happiness by acquiring wealth, they're really busy doing it. And they're encouraging each other to do it. I think it can rest here. Yeah, if I don't touch it. And so the groupings of people encourage each other in the directions of their own folly. And they reinforce each other. Now, what the inner path is all directed toward getting rid of ego, waking up to our actual soul nature. And Lahiri Mahashaya said, soul creates mind, mind creates senses, senses create the appearance of reality. Isn't that interesting? Soul creates mind, mind creates senses, senses create the appearance of reality. And so through our senses, we have, it's very, very, very hard to convince ourselves because that this world isn't real, because our senses are telling us it's real. We can pinch ourselves, we can hear others speak, we can see things, we can remember things. Everything seems very real. And unless we wake up gradually from that, then it continues its sense of being very real. And so the inner life is the life of trying to pull back from senses, then pull back from mind, back into soul. Soul too has its perceptions, its senses. Its sense of sight is the spiritual eye, which doesn't see like the two eyes just in one direction. It sees everywhere, all around, everything. Master one time said to his most advanced disciple, Rajasi Janakananda, he said, "Remember when you meditate, Rajasi, don't just have your vision go in one direction, because in your state of consciousness, it goes in 360 degrees. So look behind you too." So the soul has its kind of senses, but the senses that we're used to are kind of diminution, a kind of an echo of our soul quality. So if the whole of the path is about waking up to our soul nature and getting rid of the ego, Master defined ego very simply, and it just is so clear when you understand it. Ego is the soul identified with the body and personality, or the soul caught in the dream, or the soul hypnotized by thinking it is one and not everything. And so when we're in that state of dreaming or in that state of hypnosis, then we still have not awakened to our true soul nature. But it isn't, thank you, but it isn't that we just one day, you go along for, I don't know, however many billions of years or millions of years that we exist, millions of lifetimes, and then all of a sudden one day, bang, you're awake. No, it's a gradual progression up the scale. So you could talk about evolution of the soul, but it isn't really evolution of the soul. It's evolution of the vibration in which the soul chooses to incarnate. And so at the very early levels, it's the we tell this story every Sunday in the story of the little bird. Remember, the little bird goes out from God, and the parents tell it, be fruitful in the gifts that you had given us, that you've been given, expand and multiply them. That's like the fresh soul coming out from God. And then what happens? The little bird says, what else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? So the thought enters in, I have to protect this one aspect of the dream as opposed to everything else. And then gradually the story of the bird, it expands its consciousness, it connects with the elemental forces, and then finally it connects with God or with the guru who leads it out of the redemption is the final part of the story. But the soul goes through that also. The caste system is based on that, not the role that we play, but the consciousness with which we play. The role, who cares about the role? I mean, well, everybody cares about it. In La La Land, that's all you see. Our billboards saying this role is really a good one. Play the role, be famous, be rich, drive a BMW, whatever it is. All of those things are trying to hypnotize you. But who cares about that, really? The soul doesn't. The soul's been doing this for millions of times, millions of dreams. It'd be like somebody telling you that before you go to sleep at night, be real careful to have gilt tables in your dream. What does it matter? For the person who's awake, you know that it's a dream. Well, the soul knows it is, but it takes on gradually more and more refined incarnations. First, no energy flowing. Kind of, these are phases of it, kind of chapters. The second chapter is energies flowing, but it's all internalized. It's all, what can I have? What can I get? I don't care about other people. Reminds me of a joke that I read some years ago about this is the merchant class. So traditionally, it doesn't mean merchants are like this. It's just that that's used symbolically to describe the sense of getting for myself and not caring about others. So this man was teaching his son how to conduct business. He was had a shopkeeper, and he was training his son. And so he said, now here's a question for you. A customer comes in and they pay for an item. They pay with a $20 bill and we give them change for a $10 bill. They leave the shop with no knowledge of the fact that we've kept the extra $10. He said, now, here's a moral question for you. Do we have an obligation to tell our partner about that extra $10? So at that level, which we've all been through, the consciousness never comes in about trying to put ourselves in other people's shoes and to see what helps them, makes them happy. That's the next level. The next level is that our happiness, always, 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 it's driven, as Master said, the single motivation of everyone in the world is the same. They want to be happy and avoid pain. And it's just how we define that. So when we're at the level of the Vaishya, we define that as getting for ourselves. That makes us happy. And others, who cares about them? What else is wisdom if not to keep what is mine for myself? And then we move gradually through many, many, many incarnations. We gradually move up to the point where our happiness comes through helping others. And so in the Kshatriya stage, it's not that we're trying to repress the sense that we shouldn't cheat others. It's that we've experienced cheating others and found that that doesn't produce happiness in us, or at least not lasting happiness. And so we've grown beyond that. It's an evolutionary stage. You can't really repress yourself into these states of consciousness. It's all consciousness. So it just takes experience and time and evolution. But we get to the point where our happiness comes through helping others. But we still have in that state the fact that we want to be happy. Helping others is a means to be happy, but we also want the goodies of it. We like being man of the year for building the hospital, or being famous for feeding the poor, or, you know, so there's still ego involvement, but it's a much higher state because that ego involvement is there, but at least it's expanded outwardly or expressed outwardly toward helping others, and that expands our consciousness. It's all about expansion of consciousness. The soul, as part of God, has infinitely expanded consciousness. So to get back to that state, we have to keep expanding our consciousness. And in fact, the only real fulfillment comes through the expansion of consciousness. And that's what really fulfills us. So gradually, we experience the Kshatriya state, and then finally, we experience the state where we truly, deeply want awakening spiritually. The Brahman, all he wants is to explore his relationship with God until he realizes self-realization, that he is God, that he is the soul, that he's not the personality or the ego. And at that stage of the spiritual path, then comes enlightenment. And along with enlightenment comes probably, for most people, the desire to help others achieve that same state. That's certainly what Devi was expressing about Swamiji yesterday, is he has such a desire to help others that even though he has no kind of egoic fulfillment for returning to this world, the desire to help others, he said, will probably make me return to this world. But that expansion of consciousness until finally we find God, find ourselves as God, is the evolution of the soul. So now the inner life is really that. I mean, everybody has an inner life. People who want to cheat their customers, they have an inner life, just that their inner life is thinking of new ways to cheat. And their mind is going in that way. But we have come to the point where the primary flood of yearning in our heart goes toward reconnecting with our true soul nature, reconnecting with God. And so our inner life needs to be mainly about making that connection. So mainly about two things: pulling back from the intense involvement in senses, sensory objects, and kind of enjoyment of the drama of the dream. So that's one aspect, pulling back, and then stilling the consciousness more, not just mentally, but vibrationally. As the vibration of the consciousness becomes more and more still, it's not like none of us in this room, I would suspect, have to repress a desire to go disco dancing. Do you? Well, you don't need to raise your hand. But it comes from the fact that our consciousness now is vibrating at a certain level, and disco dancing isn't pleasing to that vibration. I love the way Patanjali put it. He put it as in cleanliness. the quality of the yama of cleanliness. He said there comes into the person who is perfected in the quality of cleanliness a disinclination for things of this world or for things of the body. So it isn't repression, it's just a disinclination for it. And so one way of expressing the inner life would be to talk about those things that refine the vibrational level of our consciousness so that everything else falls away. Everything falls away except for truly the desire to be more and more unified with our own soul, more and more unified with the God consciousness that is innate in that soul. I want to talk about a little bit about some of the things that we can do that help with that. First of all is sadhana. Sadhana is our spiritual practices. On our path, we have four basic techniques. All of those techniques are designed basically to do the same thing. The four techniques are energization, hong sa, om, and kriya. And so all of those different techniques are slight variations on the same basic practice, which is to withdraw the energy from the senses and from involvement in this world, and to direct that withdrawn energy, we can say upward, because remember that the soul sees through this spiritual eye here, so we direct our energy, withdrawn energy from the senses. So instead of the energy going out through the senses, now we withdraw it and we bring it up into the senses of the soul. So the senses of the soul is seeing the light at the spiritual eye, hearing om. And so these specific techniques, I mean, we all have, most of us have kriya. The end of kriya is focusing on the spiritual eye. Another way of saying that, the end of kriya is focusing on our soul nature. And so anything that increases and magnetizes that sense of focusing on our soul nature, we can call it God, we're focusing on God. Yes, we are focusing on God. But God will come to us not universally, but through our own particular soul, our own individualized aspect of God. That's how we will realize him. And so we're strengthening our soul nature. Lahiri Mahashaya again said, mankind has kind of two directions that his energy can go. Outward, through the mind and the senses, or inward, into the soul nature. As we direct the energy inward, the soul nature becomes more and more alive, more and more perceptible, palpable, and attractive. Until we get to the point where it's not like somebody up there, it's not God, it's not the guru, it's not anybody kind of shaking their finger at us and saying, don't want these things of the world. You're a sinner. Get down on your knees if you want the things of the world. That isn't going to work. It's our own awakening, refining nature that gets to have a disinclination because we've experienced the fact that those things don't fulfill us. And so sadhana is important primarily because it is the point at which we bring the mind along with the feelings. See, we have a feeling perception. We have intellectual perception. We try to still both of those. Still your mind if you want to pray. Still your heart if you want to pray. That's the essence of sadhana. Stilling the mind and the heart. And prayer, real prayer, is communion. Inner communion with our own soul or with God. And so stilling the mind and stilling the heart are necessary because they're such attractive, magnetic, outward-pulling aspects that our minds are too restless to perceive God. I mean, we suggested in a Sunday service a few months ago this technique of very simple technique. Try to think of God for even a nanosecond, a second in each minute. How often can you do that? They did that experiment in the church where, this was from Frank Laubach, a wonderful modern saint, did it in an experiment in the church, and most people, even in that church service where they kept being reminded, couldn't think of God more than a few times in the whole hour, a few minutes out of the whole 60 minutes. But go through the day, it's very hard to keep our mind coming back to God. So we have to get at least some magnetism going, and that comes through stillness of mind and stillness of feelings. So sadhana is the most important aspect of strengthening our inner life. And you just have to work at it. Nobody can do your sadhana for you, just like nobody can eat for you. If you want to sustain the body, you'd better eat. If you want to sustain the soul's energy, you'd better do some form of sadhana. And I won't go into it too much because we're all individual and we all have particular things, but do sadhana. One more thing about sadhana, and then I want to move on, is that especially kriya, Master said that kriya, by concentrating deeply at the spiritual eye, trying to go into the light after the practice of kriya, the movement of energy up and down in the spine under our conscious control, which is the kriya technique, awakens and loosens karmic seeds in the spine. And by concentrating here after the practice of kriya, those karmic seeds are burnt up and purified, and they don't sprout and haunt us anymore. That's why we do the fire ceremony at the beginning, offering the beginning of Sunday service, offering those seeds. And so the practice of sadhana, any kind of sadhana, will do that, but kriya especially, and that's in part why it's the jet airplane path to God, because it burns up those karmic seeds, which are the tendencies that pull us outward. So we come back inward. Okay, so first of all, sadhana. Secondly, very, very important to awaken and deepen the inner life. The longer we can stay in the, Lahiri called it the calm after effect poise of Kriya Yoga, but call it the calm inward poise that is produced by the techniques of sadhana, the longer we can remain in that state, the more that awakens in us and strengthens the inner magnetism and the inner perceptions as opposed to the outer ones. So for all of us, every one of us, that's why Swami said longer, deeper meditations. The real meditation is after the techniques stop. Longer, deeper, staying in the light, staying in the sound of Om, staying in the calm inner state for as long as we can will strengthen our inner life. Very, very important. Another very important thing is to take on the consciousness of that which we want to achieve. Many aspects of Master talk about this. He said, if you're trying to be happy, you look in the mirror and you're kind of glum. He said, take your fingers and push your corners of your mouth up. If you want to be happy, act happy, and then happiness will come. Even there is a physical relationship. Neurologists are now finding that there's brain changes that happen when you're smiling that don't happen when you're not. And so I don't have time to go into that, but there are physical aspects. That's why the techniques of sadhana that we're given are actually scientific techniques, because they produce consciousness changes. So if we're trying to achieve union with God, then in our meditation, we have to meditate as if we already have that union. As Master said to Dr. Lewis, he said, Dr. Lewis, you're not meditating correctly. Dr. Lewis said, why? And Master said, you're meditating to God. You should be meditating in God. And so when we meditate, we should be meditating with the consciousness that we are already at the state that we're trying to achieve. Because by not doing that, we simply keep that state far away from ourselves. So meditate in God and not just to God. And then finally, these are kind of the outer practices. Finally, the practice of releasing all attachments before we go to sleep at night. Swami has told us this over and over and over again for years and years. How many actually practice it? How many see a fire at night or feel something at night before you go to sleep and offer all of your attachments, all of your desires, all of your likes and dislikes into that? If you don't, start that as a practice, because that will strengthen your inner life. So that's sadhana. Now I want to touch briefly on some things that we can do during the time we're not doing sadhana, which for most of us is most of the time. So, you know, we might meditate a couple of hours a day, 3 hours a day, a little more if you're really dedicated or have the time and the circumstances. But the rest of the time, we're going about our daily affairs. During that time, to increase, to strengthen our inner life, we have to practice the presence of God during our outer activities. And I want to give some techniques or some hints on how to do that. I want to give first some doing things, and then I want to give some feeling things, because they're different. Doing. Try to carry on a constant conversation with Master. If you're walking, walk with Master. Just in your mind. Beautiful day, isn't it, Master? Look at the beautiful cedar tree. I love the way the leaves of the cedar tree just kind of float, and they have a different color from... Isn't that interesting, Master? And just talk with him. Try to get that conversation going so that it's always there in the background of your mind, sharing with Master. He said, if you think me near, I will be near. In fact, he already is near. He permeates everything. But we can't understand that unless we think him near. So have a constant conversation with him. Do chanting and japa. Even at night, try to do that so that you have a song. Don't get too many. Close your ears, David. Don't be the choir master where you have 150 different songs that you're working on. Try to take one and take it into your consciousness so deeply that it resonates all the time there. I know that when I've done this, when I wake up at night, that song will be going on in my consciousness when I practice this technique. And so I have now gotten into the habit of consciously trying to do that. I will try to get a chant, or I have one or two that I use all the time. I'll kind of get them going when I go to sleep. Sometimes I'll try to fall asleep with that chant in my mind. When I wake up during the night, that chant is still going on. And so it is throughout the day. If you will do chanting or japa, it was the primary technique that Ananda Moy Ma taught, was to keep constantly in your mind. It drives out the thoughts that pull us out into the senses. Visualizing Master's picture, listening to Om while you're trying to hear it outwardly. Stop for a moment. See if you can hear Om right now. If you can hear that and train your mind to tap into that, that is an instant spine erector. It instantly brings you back into your inner life. So listen to Om, and have it. Om is a conscious, intelligent, guiding force. It will, if you tie into it, it will help guide you. And I'm going to end just with a couple of things that are more of a, less of a doing nature and more of a feeling nature. Just try, instead of thinking and effort and trying and this technique or that technique, just relax periodically and try to just in that relaxed, calm, inward state to feel the presence of God. That's still a kind of a doing, but you see the difference, you know. One is I'm going to chant this mantra and I'm going to get my beads and I'm going to chant it 108 malas, 108 times a day, and you know, and that's all, it's kind of outward. This is just stop, still the mind, relax, feel God's presence, feel his joyful, blissful nature resonating in your heart. And finally, listen more for God's response in your heart. We're too much creatures of doing, too much creatures of outward energy. That's why in the energization, Master said, tense with will, relax, and feel. Well, our lives are filled with tension and will. How much relax and feel do we allow ourselves? Let's have a little more relax and feel. All of these, if we do them to the best of our ability, will strengthen our inner life, and that which we, the efforts that we make, are matched by Guru and matched by God way beyond our own efforts. And in this way, in this life, we can make tremendous spiritual progress.